Do I hear music somewhere? Okay. It's lovely. Somewhere else.
Scrooge.
I know, it's true. It's true. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. All right. Before we get going, for those of you that are new to how the protocols of the Portland City Council chambers, if you sign up, we'll call in the order after we have invited panels, both pro and con. We'll be calling people in order that they signed up. If you are here representing just yourself, then you just need to give us your first and last name. If you're here representing a business, an organization, or any other firm or group, then you need to declare that with just giving us your first and last name. Regardless, we don't want your phone number, we don't want your address, we don't want your telephone, well, we don't want your Twitter account, none of those things. So just your first and last name. If you don't identify yourself as lobbying on behalf of someone else, we will assume you're here speaking only for yourself. This is an important room in terms of for fostering a debate and discussion and to facilitate the agreement and disagreement. There's no clapping, there's no hooting, there's no hollering, there's no noise in response or not in response of anything. And there's also no drama. If you violate that, I'll simply have you escorted out. And I say that to any group that's going to be dealing with a contentious issue. So again, that's to facilitate so that everyone feels comfortable signing up to speak and to fulfill their request to speak. So with that, City Council will come to order. Today is Thursday, December 20th, 2012. It's 2 p.m. session. Carla, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
This is my last session as mayor.
I'm going to miss you.
Well, thank you. Can you please call the roll?
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Adams?
Here. Now, if you like something, I forgot to do that, you can do thumbs up. If you don't like something, you can do thumbs down. So you do have the ability to express yourself non-verbally. So I will turn this over to Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Read the title first.
Please read the title, sorry.
Okay. Item 1521, set referendum on fluoridation of Portland drinking water supply for special election on May 21, 2013.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Thank you, Mayor Adams and colleagues, and thank you all for being here today. It is my view that waiting until 2014 May to have a vote on fluoridation creates a problem for Portland voters in that on the same ballot they'll be asked to vote yes on one measure dealing with fluoridation and no on the other by the opponents of fluoridation. And I think it has, for both sides, an effect of denying Portlanders the chance for a clear and clean up and down vote one way or the other by separating the two measures to do two different elections. Leaving the referendum on the May 2014 ballot means, I think, confusion no matter what the outcome is, rather than clarity that I believe all of us would like to see on this issue. The claim that the May 2013 vote does not provide enough time for a campaign, a well and versed and informed campaign, for me just simply does not hold water. This issue has been the subject of nonstop discussion in Portland, believe me, because I think I've gotten more emails on this subject just myself than on any other in 10-plus years here since last summer. It's been an ongoing debate. I announced I was running for the City Council in June of 2002 and did a poll at that time. In June of 2002, I was 22 points behind the next person I was running against in the polls. By September of 2002, just 3 months later, I bested the field of candidates and won the first round of that election. So that demonstrates in a period as short as 3 months, a person can overcome seemingly hopeless odds to win. This time, however, if this measure passes today, both sides have 5 months from now until the election would occur in May 2013, which is more than enough time if either side or both can agree on an independent panel, if you choose, and more than enough time to reach every voter many times over. To me, however, frankly, those issues are secondary to what has driven me to ask the council to move the election to this next May. And that issue is public health, and more specifically, the public health of all children, but especially those children who come from low-income households who cannot afford to send their children to a dentist. This is a public health crisis, and no other issue is as important as allowing Portland voters to be able to vote to fluoridate our water sooner rather than later. I've asked pro-fluoride folks and anti-fluoride folks to be given the opportunity to come up as panels to speak to this issue without any constraints. And first, I'd like to call up the anti-fluoride folks, Clean Water Portland, Kimberly Kaminsky, Charlie White, Francis Kemps Miller, and Rick North.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Come on up. Who would like to begin? Kim?
Hi. It was a little disconcerting that we just found out an hour ago that we were going to speak as a panel. I had prepared 3 minutes of testimony for today. I didn't realize that we would have been given the opportunity to speak longer than that.
Well, so, you do. You're lucky.
Well, I appreciate that. My name is Kimberly Kaminsky. I'm the director of Clean Water Portland. You all know me by now. And thank you for taking our comments. I am here today to ask the City Council why you are pushing so zealously the forced fluoridation of our water. One really needs to question the timing of a number of decisions that were made on this matter, decisions that affect the water of hundreds of thousands of citizens in Portland and the surrounding communities. Mr. Leonard, you announced that you would push for mandatory fluoridation in September when children were out of school and many families were enjoying the last few weeks of summer. And then you promptly took, went on vacation for 2 weeks. Shortly thereafter, Mayor Adams and Commissioner Fish both announced support for mandatory fluoridation before any public hearing had ever taken place. The hearing on the day of the vote was basically a sham, as they already had 3 out of 5 council members declare their support for this questionable health policy. When we found out the city's position on fluoridation was effectively a done deal, we filed for an initiative that would amend the city charter to prevent the addition of chemicals into our water that are meant to treat people rather than to make the water potable. Shortly thereafter, Mr. Leonard announced the addition of fluoride chemicals would begin in March of 2014, 2 months before the citizens' initiative was to go to the people to vote. This announcement was made on a Friday evening just before the 3-day Labor Day weekend. I really question the timing of that. As a result of Mr. Leonard's announcement, we filed for a referendum, and we were able to gather tens of thousands of signatures, over twice the amount we needed, nearly 44,000 signatures in less than a month. This was no small feat, and it speaks volumes to the value that the citizens of Portland place on their valuable Bull Run water. It also speaks volumes to the fact that people came out in droves to sign these petitions because they care and they do not want this in our water. Now we find out this past afternoon, Friday, that this hearing today was on the agenda to move the election date of the referendum from May of 2014 to May of 2013, a year ahead of schedule. At the end of the year, when City Council has so many other important issues to address, to wrap up before the end of the year and before Commissioner Leonard and Mayor Adams leave office. The signature sheets that our signatures citizens signed clearly stated that the referendum election would take place in May of 2014, and I think that a lot of people who sign those sheets think that that's when it's going to happen. The current motion before City Hall is a slap in the face to all of the signers of this referendum who believed that that was when the vote was going to take place. You have to ask yourself, what is going on here? One needs to seriously question the timing of these decisions. It appears to be very calculated and a blatant attempt to subvert the democratic process. This time, right now, is a time that we should be enjoying with our family and friends. Children are out of school. The holidays are upon us. This is not the time to push through an issue that is clearly contentious because it may be politically expedient. The people of Portland deserve better. Clean Water Portland is asking you, the city commissioners, to convene an independent scientific panel to review the current science on fluoridation. We have both sides are saying a lot of conflicting things. We're using statewide statistics to apply to Portland. We need to look at the numbers. We need to look at the science. There have been a lot of new things that have come out recently since this policy was enacted over 50 years ago. We have the National Academy of Science report that shows that there's a lot of things that we don't know about fluoridation. Just last year, the Department of Health and Human Services lowered the recommended daily concentration by over 40% because we know that over 41.7% of 12 to 15-year-olds in this country have dental fluorosis, which is an outward sign of overexposure to fluoride. The public deserves an appropriate, informed opportunity to have a meaningful debate and scientific facts presented on both sides. We would like a panel where we sit down with the city commissioners and the proponents of fluoridation, and we arrive at agreement on the panel members, we want scientists, and we agree on a protocol and a timeline. We think this is only fair in light of the fact that the initiative is coming up and people definitely care about this issue. Again, a lot of people don't even know that the commission voted to fluoridate, and when they find out, they're very upset about it. And so I think we need time to get out the word and let people know what's going on with their water. This water belongs to the people. Given the lack of public process, the lack of notice, and the lack of the public to be an opportunity to be heard, and the extremely questionable timing of recent decisions by the City Council regarding the forced fluoridation of our water, and given that the city has voted three times already against this questionable practice, this is an opportunity for the City Council to redeem itself in the eyes of the public and regain the public trust. And instead of leaving behind a legacy of biased and dirty politics, you'll all be able to sleep at night knowing you have honored the citizens, our environment, this city, and our precious water. I did want to address the fact that proponents of fluoridation continually say that there's a dental crisis. But when you look at the SMILE survey, the same data that they cite to, you'll find that Portland has significant lower cavity rates than the rest of the state. So when we use statewide statistics to show that there is a crisis in Portland, it's either dishonest or just unwise. The SMILE survey says 54% of third graders in Portland have a cavity experience compared to the rest of the state that has a 70% problem. Can we do better? Yes, we can do better. We have to do better. There are many resources out there already that are already in place and that are already funded that we can ensure that people have better access. The people that I spoke with at some of the clinics around town said everyone's covered, regardless of your income, regardless of your refugee status or your immigrant status. And a lot of problem is that the information is not getting out to the people that need the access to care, either because they're uneducated, they're working full-time, they don't speak English, but there are many things out there, and that is where we should focus our resources on increasing access to dental care for these children and not put an unapproved toxic waste byproduct in the drinking water and call it good. This is the City Council's chance to step back and say, we need time, we need to have a meaningful public debate, and today you have the opportunity to do that. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. No more?
I did want to say that if you look at that 54% rate, we have a lower rate in Portland than the fluoridated state of New York City. So if Portland were a state, our cavity rates would actually be better than New York, which has fluoridation. And so honestly, when you look at the same statistics that proponents cite to, we have the 15th lowest cavity rate in the country. And I think it's just questionable that all of a sudden there's this dental crisis, and I think it's manufactured, and I think that that's why we need an independent panel so that we can look at the statistics and we can figure out what the rates are and what are better ways to address the problem.
Manufactured, would you mind if I ask a few questions? Because I appreciate your testimony.
Sure.
Manufactured, you say the dental crisis is manufactured. By whom and for what purpose?
Well, I just think that when people use statewide statistics to cite to a Portland problem.
By whom and for what purpose are they manufacturing? I understand your statistics.
I would say that the proponents of fluoridation have said that all of a sudden there's this dental crisis. I mean, we've been doing fine in Portland for a long time.
Now, why would they suddenly decide to manufacture this, as you're saying, fake dental crisis?
I'm not saying it's fake. I'm saying that there's problems and we can do better. But I think that proponents of fluoridation have pushed this
I know. Why do
policy.
You think, why do you think they're pushing it?
Because they've been pushing it for years, and I think that they have credibility on the line. I think they have liability on the line, and they get grant money to do it.
I see.
Could I?
No, you'll get to
something?
No, we'll get to you.
Your question.
It's one by one. So they're the proponents of this are doing it because they get grant money to do it.
I'm speculating. I want to say that, you know, organizations like Upstream do great work, farm-to-school programs, tobacco prevention. They do a lot of great work. I think that, again, there are better ways of accomplishing children's dental health.
I respect that and understand that. I'm really trying to get to the point of why, if they do good work in other areas, why are they doing bad work in this area? In your observation, you're an expert on this because you've been looking at it for a very long time, I know, working on it in the state, and I appreciate your advocacy, and I want to encourage that. But with that sort of unique view at the inside of this debate that's been going on for a long time, what would be their motivation? Why are they on this one issue acting what appears to, from what you say to be in an unethical way, in a way that would actually harm human health?
I'm not saying they're acting in an unethical way. I'm saying that I really believe that they are passionate about this issue and they truly believe that this is a sound public health policy. But when you're looking at statistics and representing them in a way that makes it look like there's a dental crisis, when that's questionable, I would have to throw that on the table. I think it's important to ask why all of a sudden.
And then the other question I wanted to follow up on, I mean, I have found very convincing your criticism and the criticism of your organization that this would be enacted before the vote. And so the change moving the vote up, which some and no organization is monolithically, you know, of one mind, I get that, but I just wanted a chance to get you to give me your thoughts on it is, under the status quo, and City Council always has the ability to move elections around, that's specifically a power that we've had and have always had, but under sort of the automatic boilerplate approach, you yourself criticized just here today that water would be being fluoridated 2 months before the voters had a chance to vote on it.
No. In this scenario, the vote would take like
under
a year.
If the vote happened a year from now, the water would already be fluoridated.
Well, that's why. We had an initiative set for the ballot for May of 2014. Mr. Leonard said that they were going to start fluoridating 2 months prior to that, before it allowed the issue to go to the voters.
So having the initiative happen earlier. That wouldn't happen, and I wanted to know, since you criticized
It's not discretionary to move the date of the initiative. I think that that is set. While the city council has the date to move a referendum, I'm certain, you know, perhaps we could ask someone that knows better than I whether the council would have discretion to move the date of the initiative.
Okay, so that's good.
But it's problematic because for the initiative, for the referendum, we had to gather 20,000 signatures in 30 days. For the initiative, we have to gather 30,000 signatures, which really means we have to gather 55,000 signatures. So we need time to do that. If you moved it up, it wouldn't give us enough time to gather the signatures, and it wouldn't be fair.
I appreciate the dialogue, and we'll move on. But as the leader of this, I really appreciate the opportunity to have a discussion in open air, and you're doing a good job. Are you contesting the city council's ability to set election dates for initiative petitions?
No, okay. I think the referendums. I think that the law is clear that you do have the discretion to do that.
Okay.
I'm just saying that at this date, by moving up more than a year, and if the concern was that there would be two things on the ballot, one to vote no and one to vote yes, I think Portland voters are smart enough to figure that one out. But we could also move it to the November election, which would give us more time. It would give us more time to convene a scientific panel, and it would give us more time to do public education and outreach. And I think that on an issue as important as our water, that it is very important to have that dialogue and to educate people about the facts.
Thanks for the discussion. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Hi, welcome back.
Hello again. Thanks for having me. Once again, my name is Frances Quimps Miller. I was in the middle of working when I got the phone call that we were at the very last minute having this panel. And though I do welcome the fact that we got this opportunity, I don't welcome the fact that it was given to us at the last minute during a time, the holidays, when a lot of us are incredibly busy. As I mentioned to you yesterday, I have several autoimmune diseases, one of which is very much affected by the cold, so this was really inconvenient for me to come out, but I, again, am very grateful for the opportunity to speak. What I would like to do, actually, is finish what I was trying to talk about yesterday, and so I'm going to start over with what I said yesterday, and I'm going to finish it up because I feel that what I have to say is important for you guys to really hear, and I hope you do, if you can, pay attention to me while I'm speaking. I think it's important for you guys to hear, and I also feel it's important for other people in this room to hear. So once again, hello. I want to begin by sharing a brief story. I grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, a city that has a number of similarities to Portland. Like Portland, it is fairly liberal, fairly white, and it also has a lot of engaged citizens. One distinct difference, however, is that Minneapolis artificially fluoridates its water. Growing up there, I never questioned the practice. I was told by my mother and occasionally others that water fluoridation was good for teeth because it reduced cavities. Despite whatever merit such a practice may or may not have, I still had 8 cavities by the time I was 18 years old. The truth is, I was a kid, and despite my mom's best intentions, I loved soda, candy, and other treats. If the rhetoric that is conveyed by groups like Upstream, who I would like to note, had a spokesperson during the last panel who is on public record, and it's easy to look it up, has some potentially tried to commit fraud with Oregon DHS, so you might want to look that one up. If rhetoric conveyed by groups like Upstream is true, then I experienced a 25% reduction in tooth decay thanks to water fluoridation, which means that instead of having 10 cavities, I had 8. Fast forward to a year and a half ago. By this time, I had been exposed to chemically fluoridated water from my hometown, chemical fluoride in medications I took for chronic conditions, as well as using a concentrated fluoride paste for weak enamel in my back teeth. After my third diagnosis of an autoimmune disease, which left me semi-disabled, my spouse began to do a great deal of medical research. She eventually suggested I stop using any and all forms of sodium fluoride, and to be honest, I doubted her. I explained that I grew up with fluoridated water and it was a good thing. Yet she convinced me, as only a good woman can do, that I should try to take a break. The day before Mayor Adams announced his support for fluoridation, I visited the dentist, for whom I did not tell that I had stopped using the concentrated fluoride paste. As the appointment came to a close, I asked about my enamel issue. She very nonchalantly looked at my teeth and said they were just fine. I inquired further, as I was used to being given a lecture about using the paste. Again, she looked at my teeth and told me to keep up doing whatever I was doing. I convey this anecdotal yet important story because I learned from this experience that not everyone is impacted by the so-called benefits of phosphate waste chemical fluoride in the same way. I will contend that some people may experience benefit from water fluoridation in its many forms, but it is certainly clear that not everyone does. This is important to explore because as we address the issue of equity, which you guys have brought up several times, Portland's marginalized and most vulnerable populations, we must consider their health, the benefits, as well as the potential neutral and negative consequences that could come from adding chemicals to our pristine waters. As you know, the phosphate mining waste added to water is regulated by a private agency called the National Sanitation Foundation. So when each and every one of you voted to artificially fluoridate Portland's water under the guise of equity, you said yes to bettering the lives of minority children by putting chemicals in the water that is handled by a private organization that deals in waste and hazardous chemicals. How do you expect minorities to feel knowing that your answer to their dental concerns involves, in essence, garbage? I know none of you are able or likely to answer the questions I'm going to propose right now. And before I do that, Amanda, I do want to speak to you personally. You called me at my home, and you said to me that you had concerns about this issue, and I appreciated that phone call, woman to woman. And then you went onto a debate on TV and said that you felt the good-hearted people of Portland would make the right choice. I think before you are four very good-hearted people, and I think we are making our choice very clear. In fact, I think the many people who signed the petition in Portland are very good-hearted. If we didn't care about children and we didn't care about their health, we wouldn't have gotten involved in this process. So I hope you think again about the definition of good-hearted. Here are my questions. Did any of you take the time to explore the appropriate solutions to dental issues, or did you indolently accept the chemical fluoridation proposal put in front of you so you wouldn't have to be bothered with addressing minority health concerns in any meaningful way? Did any of you even think to speak with coalitions of color who oppose water fluoridation? One such group is America's oldest and largest Latino civil rights group, the League of United Latin American Citizens. In July 2011, also known as LULAC, voted on and passed a resolution calling water fluoridation a civil rights violation. Did any of you read up on that? Did any of you bother to notice that when the CDC reported in 2010 that 41% of youth between the ages of 12 and 15 have some form of dental fluorosis, that Black Americans had the highest rate of mild to moderate fluorosis, while Mexican Americans had the highest rate of moderate to severe fluorosis? If we are trying to build a better future for our minority youth, don't you think leaving them with mottled teeth is a pretty bizarre approach to lowering tooth decay? Have any of you taken the time to consider the concerns of Reverend William Owens, president of the Coalition of African American Pastors, who is on record asking, why wasn't the Black community told about this issue? Blacks are disproportionately impacted by by harm from fluorides and fluoridated water. African Americans have more kidney disease and more diabetes. Therefore, they drink more water. But nobody elected to tell us that kidney patients and diabetics are more susceptible to harm from ingested fluorides. What about the words of Andrew Young, a contemporary of Dr. Martin Luther King, as well as a former UN ambassador, who said, "This is an issue of fairness, civil rights, and compassion. We must find better ways to prevent cavities, such as helping those most at risk for cavities to obtain access to the services of a dentist." I'm challenging each and every one of you to do your jobs and to not take the easy way out on this issue. More importantly, on the upcoming vote of putting phosphate in this water by moving that vote up, let the voters have a chance to do what none of you, with all due respect, had the guts to do, which is take the time to really look at this issue, the solutions, and find other approaches, not just this easy way out. Find approaches that are not cheap, not quick fixes, and not potentially hazardous to those who are most at risk. I am asking you today to help piece together an independent review panel, as well as a minority-led panel that will give this issue the weight it deserves. We need to look at this byproduct's true effectiveness and its potential consequences to those who could be most at risk, people like me. Artificial fluoridation is not an essential nutrient, but is a drug whose concentration can be adjusted, but dose can be not. Those who have diseases where they have to drink more water take in more fluoride. If you really care about equity, don't further marginalize Portland's minorities by rushing towards what you think is a solution for us. Give us a proper chance to understand, educate, and benefit from a thorough investigation. A number of other cities, like Fairbanks, Alaska, have done their own research regarding studying the scientific studies. Give all Portlanders a way to decide for themselves what is best for their health and well-being. None of you have the right to make medical decisions, especially for those who are most vulnerable. Your citizens are smart. Let them have the time to choose for themselves. And one final thing that I would like you to consider trying, if you're uncomfortable with doing it right now, doing it at your home, take a sip of water. Just take a little sip from a mug or a glass. And when you do that, track just where the water falls on your teeth. You'll see just how effective water fluoridation will be when you do that. Thank you.
I want to thank you for your testimony, and I'll also be asking the other panel questions as well, but you raised the issue of equity, and you talked about the courage to look at that issue as it relates to fluoride, and I have, and I want you to, I'd like your response, though. The coalition that came to the City Council includes the following organizations: African Partnership for Health, African Women's Coalition, Albina Head Start, Asian Health and Service Center, Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, CAUSA, Center for Intercultural Organizing, Coalitions of Communities of Color, Familias in Action, Latino Network, Native American Youth Association, the Northwest Health Foundation, and there's a long list of Oregon Latino Agenda for Action, the Philippine American Chamber of Commerce, the Portland African American Leadership Forum, PEAR, Urban League. These are the largest and most respected organizations fighting on behalf of equity that came together to form this coalition. So I'd like you to respond how their support in organizing themselves first and coming to us doesn't meet your appropriate call for involvement of Portlanders of color and Portlanders that have traditionally been shut out of decision making.
So I'm assuming that you listened to what I said, and one of the questions that I asked you was, did you take the time to look at coalitions of color that were opposed to fluoridation? Would you like to answer that question?
I did.
And which ones did you look at?
Every single organization I named here on the ground in Portland support this. So why does that not meet your request for involvement of exactly what you asked for? What's wrong with these organizations and their position in support of fluoridation?
But you did not answer my question, which was, did you consult coalitions of color
that
are against fluoride? And if so, which ones? You just gave me a long list of the ones that are in support. Which ones did you look at that are not?
No, I went to our coalition, our various organizations that deal with equity, and asked them what they thought of this.
Mm-hmm.
And their answer is to create this coalition supporting fluoridation. Is there a local, I would like to know, honestly, is there a local equity advocacy organization that has come out against fluoridation? I would like to know.
So you're still not answering my question, but I will go ahead and answer yours. LULAC, the organization that I mentioned, is a national organization. It is the oldest and the largest organization. We do not have a chapter here. However, if we did, I know people would certainly access that. Again, I understand that many coalitions came to you or you came to them. Here's a few things. I've worked in nonprofits, so I know a thing or two about what goes on behind them. Now, I absolutely think that one of the reasons why we need to give the voters and organizations time to look at this issue, more than 5 months, especially coming off the heels of the holiday, is because when you are working at a nonprofit, even when you're in management or at the upper levels, you are busy. You are incredibly busy. And when you look at things, you look at solutions to problems, sometimes in that time, you look at the first couple things that come up because they look right, they sound good, and you do your best, but sometimes you don't always have the full story. And history shows time and time again that there have been nonprofits whose initial decisions were not always the best one. I think some of these nonprofits who were approached maybe didn't have the full information from other groups such as LULAC or the Black Pastors Association, and they don't know that other side. This is precisely why we are asking for you guys to allow us to take this time, because I think in all fairness, you know, we're all really, really busy, and we all have the right. 5 months goes by quick, really quick. And I know, as a minority who happens to have a chronic illness, that giving me the time to read something, sometimes I need that extra month or two. So I really think that this is why we need to have that. Again, I would just really consider asking yourself, though, why, if you haven't looked at the groups that are opposed to fluoride.
Oh, I have.
Okay, I'm saying on a national level, and particularly since you keep using equity as your reason for doing this, why you aren't talking about what they have to say, what points you find that you think are meaningful to you, and what groups you did look at, because so right now you haven't said that to me.
We're going to move on, but you can read my thoughts in looking at lots and talking and reviewing lots of information that are as critical of this issue as you are, and I made my decision after doing that. So thank you for the opportunity for discussion.
Don't forget that sip of water.
Hi, welcome.
Hi, thank you. My name is Charlie White. You've seen me many times here before. I have so much to say every time I sit in this seat and hardly know how to organize it effectively enough to be heard. I've shared a lot of written materials, printed, sent you emails, requested you to look at things. I participated recently in a thing called a Tooth Summit, to which I sent you a link where you could learn about alternative dental approaches. And it also looked at issues such as root canals and the problems associated with root canals in the body. There's nowhere else in the body where we leave something dead. So there are so many issues around this topic that is not just about fluoride, and it's not just about children's teeth. It's a political, health, equity, ethic It's a laden issue, and so I'm going to try to do this in an organized way. Thank you for allowing us to be here, albeit on horribly short notice. I have piles of papers that I could have gotten my fingertips to and presented in an effective way, so I'm going to do my best here. To answer the question you put to Kim, I don't believe that this is disingenuous on anyone's part who is either pro or negative water fluoridation. The problem is that we are so easily influenced by who we are in the world, where we are grown up, who raises us, who teaches us, who wears what clothes that have influence on our belief system, what color skin they have, what position in life they have, if they're powerful, political, poor. These are the things that affect us and influence us in life. So this issue has as much passion, this water fluoridation issue, as there is its sordid history, its politics, its money, its information, and its disinformation, and its misinformation. It takes time and a willingness to do the hard work and the research to sort out the truth versus the facts. We've had a half century of a belief that fluoridation works. But where does that come from? And I don't know if any of you has really done any of the history, reading, research, the politics involved in it, the factions of scientific community and medical community that actually have looked at this. Fear-mongering is a label that a lot of us who have looked at the issue and have gone against the grain have had to bear. And one example is when Paul Connett, who is an authority on this issue and has gone out to, you know, he's dedicated his life, as is his entire family, to research in this matter. And he was so marginalized by this entire community when he was here. And his book, which was co-authored by other scientists and psychologists, I can't remember his other co-author's position, but a faculty member. And they did extensive research and found that this was going to be the final death knell for the lie of water fluoridation. And in fact, it was marginalized by this community, by Upstream, in a radio interview. And he was called a fear-mongerer, and everything in it was called fear-mongering, when in fact the person who issued that insult to him hadn't even read the book. So, you know, we're dealing with a lot of positioning and a lot of just accepting who it is, what it is that we think we believe. It's the easy road. It's easier to just kind of generalize or marginalize than it is to really go into what it takes to learn about it. And we're all very busy, and so it's our responsibility. And then I will remind Council once again, because I've brought this up before. I've been on your website, I can't even count the number of times over the last year, and several times I've gone to your fluoridation part, the part of your water section of the fluoridation issue. And it's a full page of a lot of information. And I've never seen anything on there that does anything but have a link for the ordinance, which has a lot of the talking points that the pro-fluoridation people say over and over, and the dentists say over and over, and the ADA says over and over, and the CDC says over and over, which are always referred to. So it's this kind of loop, like a GIF. And I really feel it frustrating that if you really genuinely want the voters to make a wise decision rather than telling us how we should vote or what we should believe in, that the website that provides this information from council would give us a full panoply of information and resources so that we could make an informed decision. This is what voting is about. And I believe this is what your job as council members is about, not taking a faction of the public and getting a list of sponsors and endorsers and people who are going to line up on your side to aggressively influence a community decision that really needs to be discussed, scientifically assessed, and not promulgated on the basis of some huge agenda, which I'm supposing, but based on the way this has been handled, I think there's a really big agenda here. And one of them, and I'll just say it, is that I have water from TVWD, which is Bull Run Water, and also from the JWC, the Joint Water Commission. I've been attending the commission meetings there, the board meetings, for approximately a year every month, trying to find out how to get fluoride out of our water. I found out that the commission is very committed to the voters. The voters voted it in. The voters need to vote it out. I'm a lone individual there with a lot of things that I would prefer doing, but I tend to monthly trying to find the best way to do this. And also to educate, because, you know, we have, fortunately, people who attend these meetings. We have cameras and we have audio, and we also have, hopefully, a people who've been voted who will lend an ear to this process, which is always arduous for everyone, very time-consuming and demanding for everyone. And sometimes you just want to turn it off. But, you know, the public deserves not to be turned off on this issue. And the public deserves to have the amount of time it takes to do the research, ask the questions, talk amongst their neighbors, hear something on the air or read something in the paper and just say, wow, I didn't know that. I've talked to a lot of people, educated people, people in my line of work, people on the street, who don't even know what we're all dealing with here in this room. It has taken our lives over, this process, ever since we heard of the mandate on August 10th. Literally, stressfully taken our lives over addressing this issue, getting the 30,000, well, we actually got way over 40,000, but we did our own evaluation before we even handed them over a day early. We deserve to have more time, and we deserve to have a panel of experts and panel of people who don't just have one purview or the other. It wouldn't be any more right if all of us who are concerned about water fluoridation, who came to you and said, you know, this is what we want. We just, you know, we don't want any of this in here. And everyone said, well, you know, it's not right to force an issue and to create a political climate which we have all dealt with on a daily basis, the way this has been done. And I don't know if any of you can deny that this has not been, if you want to talk about equity and ethics, this has not been handled in an equitable or ethical manner politically.
Charlie, I have two questions for you,
sure.
If I could. And I appreciate your comments today. The first has to do with the question that's before the council. And I appreciate that each of you is eloquently stating your case against fluoride. And you've made many of the same points in prior hearings that we've had, and you certainly have the right to continue to make the case. But
sometimes we need to hear things many times.
That's what my wife and kids tell me all the time, so I get that. But today's hearing is about a decision about changing the date, not a decision about changing the council's unanimous vote on fluoride. And I appreciate that they get conflated, but our role today is to decide whether there's a compelling public interest in changing the date. And the charter specifically directs that we have that authority and gives us a test to apply. So I think in fairness, while you're here, I would like to ask you, based on the charter language, what your best argument is as to why it would not be in the public interest to
to have a more prompt election?
Sure. Well, first of all, this leads to what I was preparing when I thought I only had 3 minutes today, so I will address that. Just before your vote to mandate water fluoridation in September, Mr. Fish, you stated that the voters elected city council members to make the tough decisions. And despite your position on fluoridation, which you are entitled to, isn't it also true that those who signed our petition are the same voting public that put you into office to make these tough decisions? So when they signed the petition, they signed it with the understanding, and we promoted it with the understanding that there would be a May 2014 petition or a vote. And with that in mind, we also found out in all of the petition drive process that there was a lot of education in the public that we needed to organize. There are a lot of groups that have been contacted, but there are a lot of groups who haven't, and there are a lot of people who are very concerned that they haven't known about this process, that they didn't even know really what fluoridation was about or that it was going to be mandatory. There are some health effects. Even most recently, just this week, I heard the effect on, I've known about the effect of fluoride on the pineal gland. But the pineal gland is the source for melatonin. And so people aren't getting adequate sleep. There are studies coming out all the time. We don't need to rush this. And there is a lot of, for example,
so, ma'am,
I want to answer his question.
No, but I just want to give you a time check because there are a lot of people in the room that want to testify. So
I agree.
I think we've given you almost 10 minutes.
Okay. Okay. I was told by Stu from Randy Leonard's office that we had unlimited time.
You do have unlimited time, but I want you to know there are other people behind you who want to speak as well, so just keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Ms. White, just two other quick questions. As I read the charter, the earliest date that you could actually seek an election, because of the way the charter is, unless the council set another date, the earliest date that you could actually seek an election was May of 2014. Is that correct? That was the earliest ballot that qualified under the charter language. So in picking that date, you just conform to what the charter says, that it would be the next primary or general election. And so that meant it could be no sooner than May of 2014. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know the language of the charter.
Well, my understanding... So I'll just represent to you, because I've been reading the charter a lot. That's how the charter is written.
Yes.
It said, so that's the earliest date that you could go out, mm-hmm. unless mm-hmm. the council, which is specifically given the authority to decide this question, mm-hmm. believes there's a public interest in an earlier date. So right. that's, and I just want, since I'm trying to wade through all the testimony today, I just want to sure. focus people on that point, because that actually is what we have to decide today. The other thing I just wanted to ask you, because I asked this question of Rick yesterday, and I realized it was in September that we had the debate about fluoride, but I do not remember in that debate a request by any of you that we convene an independent panel. And if you did, please correct me. But if I'm correct, when was the first time that you concluded that to have a thorough debate, we needed an independent panel? When did that first become part of your view on this issue?
We've been asking for that from the very beginning. We wanted to organize when Paul Connett was here at the time of your vote,
yeah.
we were trying to organize a community meeting, a community event, to which we wanted anyone, including the commissioners, to attend. And it was...
I get that. And with all yeah. due respect, you're suggesting that we need an independent body to spend the next year having a community discussion. If I missed that in our debate in September, then you'll correct me. But
are you talking about our TV?
No, I'm talking about the discussion we had at council. I don't remember at that time this issue being raised in all the arguments you made. And I listened very carefully to arguments against fluoride. You had many different arguments. I don't remember that issue, and that's not to say it's not a legitimate issue to raise, but I don't remember that being the primary concern at the time.
So please turn off your cell phone ringers.
It's hers.
Yeah, I don't need that.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Anyway, I thank you. I mean, I have enough for now. Let's give Rick a chance.
So may I just finish? So I have a lot to say, but I'll cut it short, and I'll just say that it takes time to learn, and it takes bless you. It takes longer to unlearn and learn something we didn't know and believed to be the opposite. Water fluoridation being beneficial began as a public relations and fluorine lawyer's lie. And as with all lies, it keeps getting bigger. May 2013 does not give the voting public an opportunity to learn the legitimate health concerns of public water fluoridation, much less unlearn that which we've been told for a half century may have more holes in it than their children's teeth.
Thank you. Hi, welcome. You need to push that button there, though.
So, Mayor, before you move on, I would like to respond to Commissioner Fish's question, which and to elaborate that since the initiative, the referral qualified for the May of 2014 ballot, I have been saying that we need to have an independent review and an extended discussion over the next year, including in that interview which Ms. Kuntz-Miller referred to. So that has been something that I've been looking forward to in terms of the public interest of the timing of the vote, is that we have time to do more discussion before that. So just to clarify, that has been part of the discussion since the vote on September 16th.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, because but what I was getting at was the discussion at the time we voted on this, not subsequently. And I think I'm not questioning the strategy or the request. I just want to get the timeline right. So, thank you.
Okay. My name is Rick North, and thank you for inviting us here. Appreciate it. Just to answer some of your questions that you brought up, Nick, that one right there. I mean, really, when you think about this, this independent panels, they have been thrown around, for months, but look at this realistically. The Oregonian broke the story August 9th that you were planning on fluoridating, you were voting September 12th. I mean, all of our energy, we were in a total scramble mode. It caught us all by surprise, as it did virtually everybody else, was trying to convince all of you not to fluoridate. We were not thinking anything past that time when you were going to vote. That debate, you call it, or actually, I think you mean the hearing, right? September 6th, is that what you're referring to? I mean, the vote was 6 days away. I mean, this is what we were concentrating on. So we were not thinking any further along than that. And then, you voted for it, and then we had 30 days to gather 20,000 legitimate signatures starting from scratch. I mean, do you really think it's realistic that we're going to be thinking about anything else other than the urgent matter at hand? I mean, look at it from our point of view. Why aren't you guys throwing all these different ideas out? Well, yeah, these ideas have been out for an independent panel. But this has been, for us, kind of one emergency after another that we've had to respond to. That's why. And in terms of, when we came up with it, well, now, then we heard, again, I don't know, about 10 days ago, again, from the newspapers, now you're thinking about moving up the date of the election. Okay. Well, if you do that, and I'll get to this in a couple of minutes, well, that pretty much makes it impossible to even do an independent panel, an independent scientific panel. And I'll tell you why. There's not enough time, because I can speak from other people's actual experiences, not theories. So it brought it to a head for us, and of course, so that's why. Does that make sense to you?
It was a question, Rick. We've not had judgmental conversations about this.
Okay.
I posed the question, and I appreciate the answer. But
okay, that's why. Sam, to respond to your questions, Why are the proponents doing this now, you asked? In Portland, why now? I think part of it's political, to be honest with you. Fluoridation proponents have tried several times at the state level to get a bill passed at the state level mandating that all cities of 10,000